Good morning, and I welcome you to this, the first of our May editions of At Home This Morning, a magazine programme that we hope will provide you with a look at our world, both in and around the city of Brighton and Hove, all for both our older listeners and those not so old. In this edition of the show, we'll be hearing from Gordon Harrison from Specsavers about what to do if your specs or hearing aids are on the blink. There'll also be some news on how our local children's hospice is in financial trouble, and Greg Reed from HomeServe will be joining us to offer some good news for NHS and care home staff who have problems with their home heating, hot water or electrics, and how they can get them sorted now, for free. There'll also be info on a special new series of TV shows for railway enthusiasts from Tim Dunn. Plus, our executive producer, Richard Davis, will be here with some much-needed news about the Good Things Foundation. That's all to come in this edition of At Home This Morning, a magazine programme that's made for Brighton's only truly local radio station, Radio Reverb, by Grey Matters Productions, and is broadcast on 97.2 FM, DAB Digital Radio, on your smart speaker, and online at RadioReverb.com. Now, with the high streets closed and in lockdown, what can you do when you need urgent and specialist care for either your glasses or your hearing aids? Well, help might be available without the need for a visit to either A&E or audiology at the Royal Sussex County Hospital, or alternatively the Eye Hospital, both of which are working flat out anyway. To support our and the government's restrictions, Specsavers are keeping a number of their stores open. And to find out just what help is available, we're joined now by Gordon Harrison, who's head of audiology for Specsavers. Good morning, Gordon, and welcome to At Home This Morning. How is this scheme to keep your shops open actually going?
Good morning, Chris. I think it's going well. I think what we're finding now is people are settling into routine life. There's maybe less of a panic, and people are starting to take the time to call us to work through and make sure that we can give them the right treatment as they require. And I still think it's going quite well.
Are all your shops open, or is it just a selected few?
It's the majority of the stores are open. There's only a few that aren't open for urgent emergency services.
Do people just walk in as usual, or do they have to make an appointment?
Well, at the moment, we're asking people to, first of all, either contact us through Ask the Experts at specsavers.co.uk or contact your local store and discuss the challenges or the problems that you're having, and then we'll be able to give you the best advice on the course of action, whether that will require a visit to the store or some sort of onward referral, or maybe just a simple visit from ourselves to be able to repair a hearing aid or glasses, for example.
How much work can people actually do in store to repair either spectacles or, as you say, hearing aids?
The work in store to be able to do the repairs is as we would normally be able to do. It's just we have to put in a different drop-off procedure so that we can maintain the social distancing. We have to step up the infection control to make sure that people are getting the as safe as possible an experience. We have social distancing in place, so we don't have people in the store. We have appointments only coming into the store, so we know how many people will be there at any specific time, and we can maintain that social distancing as we would carry out the repairs.
Can you see this carrying on a long time? I mean, already we're several weeks into this lockdown, and it looks like it's not ending anytime soon.
Yeah, of course, we watch the news like everyone else and observe other countries and where they're getting to and how they're coming in and out of social distancing and lockdown measures. I think for the next few weeks, it's important that we protect the NHS as much as possible to give them every opportunity to support the ones who really need it. So I can see it certainly for the next 3 weeks as being something where social distancing measures and isolation will still be enforced. And I think longer term from that, we have to kind of consider those who are vulnerable and how they integrate back in and how society starts to come out of the lockdown. I don't think it will be a free-for-all, if you like. I think it will be a staged release.
The question of cost. You mentioned the NHS Does the service you provide apply to both private people, people who are actually paying money, or just those on NHS, or both?
Yeah, it applies to both. So the services there, again, it's for an emergency care. It's for people who really need that support at the time. So it applies to both, whether it was someone who had a who purchased hearing aids privately or had been provided from us on the NHS, and the similar with optics. So we're there, we're open for everyone who needs it.
Your staff are always very smartly dressed, but are they wearing PPE?
Yeah, we, of course, safety of our staff and our customers and everyone involved is paramount in what we do. So we work quite hard to make sure that we have a supply of PPE where we, when we can observe the 2 metre social distancing, we would be having the correct PPE to be able to perform that urgent care at that point. But again, we're limiting it, so we're not doing anything routine. It's only when we have to and we can observe that, that 2 metre kind of social distancing.
And how busy have the shops been?
I think it's more so the phone lines have been busy, and we're getting a steady stream of appointments through the day. I wouldn't say that you would it's one in, one out in the way that you see the supermarkets. I think we're getting a number of people coming through throughout the day who require that urgent care or essential care, but it's certainly not like the sort of one out approach. It's more the phone lines have been busy. It's more the fact of our clinicians have been doing maybe more domiciliary work where we're going to people to save them travelling and then being able to support them locally.
Finally, are all these details on the website?
Yeah, they're all on the website, specsavers.co.uk, and you'll be able to find the local phone numbers for you in your search store, which is in the top left-hand corner of the screen if you go onto the website.
Gordon, thank you very much for joining us, and have a safe day, and the same to all your staff.
Thank you, Chris, and you.
Joining us now is Charlotte Waring from the Chestnut Tree Children's Hospice. And I hope you'll remember Charlotte from when we spoke a few weeks ago during my very special visit to the hospice, which of course was some long time before the current coronavirus outbreak. Good morning, Charlotte, and welcome once again to At Home This Morning.
Hi, Chris. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to speak to you again.
And you. Now, I remember when we spoke previously, you were explaining how tight the finances were then. So just how difficult is the current lockdown restrictions making life for a charity like yours?
Well, from lots of different aspects that have changed dramatically for us at Chestnut Tree House, you know, always the safety and well-being of the children and the families, our staff, our volunteers, everyone is our number one priority. So since the beginning of the lockdown and the beginning of the whole sort of COVID-19 situation, we've been monitoring everything, working alongside Public Health England and getting advice from the NHS. So as a result of that, we have actually shut the hospice to respite and daily visits that the children could have had previously. Obviously, our children are very vulnerable. So in fact, they've been self-isolating with their families for longer than most of us have. We are still open for end-of-life care and for emergency care for those families that do need to use us, and the care team are still working really hard to support all the families. Currently we've got about 300 children right across Sussex, so Brighton and Hove obviously, East and West Sussex, and also down into South East Hampshire. So those families are being supported by regular telephone calls. If they are able and do want to have a community visit, that is still available for them. We're doing different things to just keep in contact with the families. We're doing virtual storytelling, for example, singing sessions. The care team have been delivering activity packs and craft packs that have been personalised for those children depending on what their likes are. So from that kind of aspect, it's pretty much business as usual. It's just we're working in a different way, just having to adapt to the situation. Obviously, with the children being self-isolating with the families for such a long time now, it is very easy, as you can imagine, for them to start to feel very isolated, and our care team do want to be there to do their best for those families, as always.
Absolutely. And how are the staff and volunteers coping? Because they live for the children, don't they?
Yes, indeed. And the volunteers in general have been stood down, so we don't want to put anybody at risk. Some of the fundraising staff are furloughed. Other staff are all still working, but we're very much, as always, about looking after ourselves as well as the families. You know, that saying about the oxygen masks on an aeroplane, that you look after yourself first to enable you to look after others. So we are looking after each other to make sure that everybody is okay.
That's good. And what about your lovely building? Because, I mean, it's so special. Are you able to keep the lights on?
Yes, we are open. As I say, we are available for end-of-life care for the families. So we do have a core of people still there. And sadly, during this period, we have had families come in and make use of the hospice end-of-life situation. It means the cook will go in and cook for the family. The cleaners are still there. There is always care staff available 24 hours a day at the end of the phone for our families, because we know that things don't happen from 9 till 5. Could be 3 o'clock in the morning that they have a problem. So there is somebody available all the time.
And what can people do to help other than volunteer, which, as you say, they've stood down?
Well, obviously, we've had an enormous impact on our finances as a result of this. The fundraising that we had planned, whether it was our own events or whether it was third-party events that other people were putting on for us, those have all either been postponed or cancelled. All our shops, and as you know, we have a shop in Brighton and one in Hove, very popular shops. Those two, along with all other charity shops, are currently shut for the foreseeable future. So that is an enormous hit on our finances. It cost roughly £400,000 a month to provide the services that we do, and we've calculated that we've probably lost about 70% of our fundraising income as a result of the situation. So we have actually launched a crisis appeal, a Save Our Services, SOS appeal. That means that hopefully we can raise enough money so that not only can we continue to care for our children and families now, but actually, just as importantly, we can continue to care for them into the future. And we do appreciate that it's a difficult time for everyone. But I would say that if any of your listeners are in a position to make a donation, it doesn't matter how big or how small, it would really make a difference. We are unbelievably reliant and very, very grateful to our community to help us do what we do. And that's in a normal situation, let alone now. So perhaps if people would regularly maybe go out for a meal or perhaps go out and meet friends for a coffee, if they could think about donating what they might have spent on a meal out or even on a coffee to us, that would be fantastic. We did talk about it briefly when we spoke before, but we also have our lottery that is weekly. People could sign up to that. It's £1 a week. And our lottery is very popular. You could be in with a chance of winning £1,000 every week and still get that call from Ellen on a Friday afternoon to say you've won £1,000. The other thing is to spread the word about Chestnut Tree House, because that is really important for us, that that message gets out there, that we are still available to the families and to other families that find they might need us during this time and into the future. So that message is equally as important.
And how can people get in touch?
Well, we have a website, which is www.chestnut-tree-house.org.uk. On there, there's lots of links and things with news items and ways to help, how to join our lottery, all those kind of things. So if people would like to look on our website, then they can click through to the bits that interest them. We have our appeal on there, so people can donate online, or that's not the preferred way of making a donation. We are still accepting cheques, so people can pop a cheque in the post to us at Dover Lane and the cheque will get processed and go into our account as normal. So that would be fantastic.
You're confident you'll be able to keep going?
Do you know what? I've said this to a couple of families who I've spoken to and supporters who are very worried about the situation, and rightly so. It is a scary situation for all of us, but our community has never let us down before. We can only do what we do with the support of the community, and I think that's the same as it is now. I don't think our community are going to fail us now. I think people will come together. They have come together. They've done all sorts of things. We've had people digging allotments to raise money. We've had people doing all sorts of strange challenges. We have a lady that dresses up in balloons, in fancy dress. That's what she does as a living. She's a balloon modeler, and she's had some incredible creations that she's made. And she goes out, does her daily exercise, and asks people to donate if they like what they see. Things like that. I mean, just madcap ideas of stuff that people can get involved with, fundraise for us. So, yeah, it's absolutely amazing.
Charlotte, that's wonderful. More power to your elbow, and thanks very much for joining us once again.
Thank you, and thank you for everybody who is supporting us. We couldn't do what we do either now, in the past, or in the future without everyone's help. So thank you. You stay safe, Chris, and everybody else out there, best wishes to you all.
We were hearing from Charlotte Waring from the Chestnut Tree Hospice. Now, we all have problems at home on occasions with our plumbing and our electricity, and goodness knows what else. And it's always been, could be, something of an expensive problem. Well, now a UK company is helping the NHS staff and presumably other social and special workers. And joining us on the phone to tell us all about it, Greg Reed, UK Chief Executive Officer of HomeServe. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
And tell me, HomeServe, what exactly do you do?
Well, HomeServe is an international home assistance company that was founded in the Midlands. It's now got 7 million customers in countries from the USA to Japan. But our base is still the UK, where we insure 1 in 10 homes for mishaps like the boiler going wrong, or a leaky pipe, or a clogged up drain. And we have our own engineers around the country, 900 of them, who go into a million different homes a year and do repairs.
And can they still do that in these difficult times with social distancing and everything else?
Well, we're not doing every type of repair or maintenance that we normally would do. So we're following the government guidelines, for essential working, and we are only doing emergencies at this time. So if you had something like, say, a dripping tap or an annual boiler service, we would ask to schedule those for later. But anything that's really going to get in the way and disrupt your life, especially while so many people are working from home, it's seen as very important for us to get out.
Okay, and you're announcing something special, I think, this week.
Yeah, we're really privileged to be able to do this. We're announcing that we're going to repair home emergencies for NHS and social care workers for free until the lockdown is over, and we've set aside £1 million to cover this. We think, these are the people who are helping us, and we're looking forward to being able to help them.
And what exactly is involved, and how can NHS and social care people take advantage?
They just need to give us a call on 0330-0247-222 or visit us at homeserve.com. We've got a few simple questions like name and address and the nature of the issue to make sure it's a repair. And then we'll ask, where you work or why you think you qualify for the offer. And then after that, it's as simple as us sending the engineer out, usually the same day.
I mean, it sounds very simple and easy to do. Do people have to show some sort of ID?
If they have an ID, they can show the engineer. That would be helpful. But we'll try to make sure that all the verification is done on the phone. It's not going to be an onerous process. We know that these people are already very stressed and tired, so we don't want to make it more difficult.
I mean, that's amazing. And you talk about £1 million. I mean, that's an awful lot of money.
Yes, it is an awful lot of money, and we think we can do a lot of good with that money. I know one of the first reasons we thought of this was we'd gotten some feedback from a customer, one of our normal customers, who said she'd gotten home and her hot water wasn't working, and she was so glad that we got there that night and fixed it, because after a very, very long shift, she just wanted to get a shower and get into her sleepwear. And so, we read that and realized, maybe we could do a bit more than we're already doing. And that's why we got going on this. £1 million, it is a lot of money, but, it's really amazing what the NHS and the social care workers are doing for everybody these days.
And, of course, I'm sure you've heard of Captain Tom and his efforts to raise money so it looks like everybody's getting involved.
Yeah, I mean, Captain John is an amazing thing, and that obviously did the rounds in our company and in our internal social media, and a lot of people support it. And we've got, you know, our own little versions of that going on. There's a guy in the company named David Richardson who, is a 3D printing enthusiast. And, he realized early on that he could make, face shields for the NHS. And so he asked, people in the company if they'd, donate money from Dubai Supplies, maybe another machine, and then also materials if they had it, because you can recycle some things. And, you know, the response was amazing. And I'm just so impressed with David. He's, now cranking out 300 face shields, that, you know, he's got a long list of orders, from people in NHS, for this PPE. So you can all, you know, help out in your own way. And, you know, I'm sure that's never something he envisioned using those 3D printers for. But, you know, there he is doing it.
Amazing. Absolutely. More power to his elbow and everybody else on your staff. How long will this offer last?
Well, we've kept it simple, and we've said for the duration of the lockdown. So, you know, I think we know that's at least 3 more weeks, but it could be longer. And, you know, we'll just keep going until we think, you know, the need isn't there.
Is there a simple rule? How can people make sure that they qualify?
Yeah, I mean, I think NHS workers, so we're saying everyone, not just doctors and nurses, so everyone working, you know, with and in the NHS, so that would probably include some third-party workers who do other services for them in the hospitals or GPs. And then social care workers, I think that's a very broad category. So this, you know, our intention is to cover nearly 3 million people with this offer. So I think, you know, generally people will know if they qualify for those two. They can give us a call. Like I said, we're not going to, look for ways to tell people no. So, I think if someone gives us a call, they'll be pleasantly surprised that we'll try to get someone out to help them right away.
Now, of course, we're concentrating on the NHS, but what about people like the fire service and police? Are they included, or is that a step too far?
Well, I mean, I have to be honest with you. We, you know, when we were laying this out, we originally thought NHS, and then, you know, we've seen the press this week about social care workers and especially in care homes, the difficulties they're having. So we wanted to help them. And I think, you know, we'll see how it goes. What we don't want to do is, provide a bad service to the NHS or the social care workers or our existing customers. But, you know, as we go through this, if we see that we've got a bit more spare capacity and we can do something, then we'll look to expand it.
That's brilliant, Greg. Thanks very much for joining us. And just before you go, can you repeat those contact details for us?
Sure. You can reach us. The other thing to point out about this is it's 24 hours a day that we've got engineers out there. So anytime you need us, you can give us a call on 0330-0247-222.
And the website?
And the website is homeserve.com.
As simple as that. Greg, Thank you very much, and more power to you and all your staff.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Greg Reed, the CEO of HomeServe, was explaining how our present-day heroes, the NHS and care workers, of course, can get help with electrical and plumbing problems at their homes absolutely free. Now, here's Richard Davis.
Thanks, Chris. Well, with most older people like you and me being confined to our houses for days on end, digital media such as the internet have really come into their own as a means of keeping in touch with friends and relations, ordering food and drink to be delivered, and indeed providing us with entertainment. But there are still many people around, probably a disproportionate number in our generation, who don't have access to the internet and are not happy with how they should use it. Well, I recently came across an organisation who are devoted to remedying this and introducing as many people as possible to the advantages of being online. It goes by the rather strange name of the Good Things Foundation, which, to my mind, makes it sound a little bit like an evangelical religious group. So when I spoke recently on the phone to Helen Milner from the group, I began by asking her if it actually was such an organisation.
No, we're not an evangelical religious group at all. So it's really funny you say that, actually, because when we were looking for a name, we either found evangelical religious kinds of names or dating apps. And I think it's about bringing people together and about doing good deeds. So we're actually evangelical about people having better lives and being part of the digital world.
So the digital world is a good thing you refer to, is it?
It is. So many things nowadays you're expected to do online. So many public services, commercial services, etc. Clearly, it's still a choice. I don't think that this is about forcing people to use the internet to do things. But if actually people want to, or they feel excluded, for example, for applying for work or saving money or being able to be more flexible in this day and age, it's also about keeping yourself healthy and keeping your loved ones healthy and keeping in touch with other people. And all of those things are huge benefits of the internet. And so it's about making sure that everybody gets an equal opportunity to be part of that and to be able to benefit from it.
So how do you operate?
We work with community organisations right across the country. So community centres, libraries, local aged care centres, small local charities, for example, that support people with disabilities or people who are looking for work. Day centres, for example, where older people might go. So all of these people are our community partners. We call that the Online Centres Network. So they are not owned or operated by Good Things Foundation at all. I think of it as a big club with a shared vision. So our vision is a world where everyone can get the support they need to benefit from the internet. And all of the work that we do, that we provide for those local partners and for the people that they support, is all free. And then we work with government and big companies like Google or Lloyds Bank or BT or JP Morgan or Accenture, who then provide funding for us to be able to support local centres and also to provide grants for some of them some of the time as well.
So does your work consist mainly of training people?
Well, I actually don't use the training word because I think there's a lot of adults here, and it's really about, you know, what is it that you want to do on the internet that you can't do at the moment? So actually, you're kind of right. Training is part of it, but that feels to me that, you know, like you're being taught, whereas this is really about helping you to get the support that you need to do the stuff that you need and that you want to do. With Good Things Foundation, we also have an online learning platform that's called Learn My Way. So that's learnmyway.com. And again, that's all completely free. And that's got lots of courses online, but it's really, really simple stuff. So, you know, it's designed for people to learn how to do things they don't currently know how to do. And so we try and make sure that we break everything down in simple language, like no jargon, and there's little activities for people to do. So that's all very, I hope, non-threatening and is designed for people who do want to learn more about the internet. And also all of these community organisations that we work with, one thing that really stands them out is that they're informal, they'll support people in the way that suits their needs and they can go at the pace that they want to go at.
Do you work with individuals or is it just with partner organisations?
Primarily with the community partners, with those community organisations. But we also have Learn My Way, so the online learning platform, so learnmyway.com, where any individual can go. So that's really the main way in which we work with individuals. We don't work directly with individuals. And then we also provide grants for some of the local partners as well. So it's very much about us working in partnership, so working out what a local community organisation needs to help them to be able to help people to use the internet and to use the internet to benefit their lives, and then we look to provide that.
And you say you provide grants to some of these organisations?
We provide grants to some of the community organisations, so about 500 of them a year, and we do that as what we like to think of as a partner, not just a funder. So this is really about providing the grants, but also what other help can we provide to help those organisations be successful.
And where does the money come from?
We work with national organisations, the government, and also large companies who then provide funding for us through contracts to deliver particular programmes, be that about digital inclusion, we call it, so helping people learn how to use the internet, It could also be about, for example, how to develop financial capability, again, using the internet and digital tools. And we also have a program which we call helping people who know how to use the internet but want a little bit more support. So each program has a sort of specific set of objectives, and the grants help us and the community organisations to deliver that.
Now, you're obviously a national organisation, in fact, international. You have a branch in Australia. Can you give me an example of anything that you've done in the Brighton and Hove area?
Because of COVID-19, we've been working on a programme called Devices.Now. So that's about how do we help people in communities who don't have a tablet or a laptop or anything and don't have the internet at home to be able to do all the things that you really need to do at the moment, particularly about finding accurate information and being able to search for help. And to video call with friends and family is really important to have that kind of connection to people outside the home, particularly if you're self-isolating or shielding and you may want to video call with a doctor or a health practitioner. We've just had 1,000 devices donated to us via BT, and we have distributed that out to the first 100 places. And one of those places is Digital Brighton and Hove. We've delivered 10 devices to them. So Digital Brighton and Hove is definitely part of this new Devices.Now campaign. Their website is www.digitalbrightonandhove.org.uk. And people can go on their website and find out how to get in touch with them if they need a device. So a tablet, that normally means. And some connectivity. So that's something that we've been doing in the last week.
Can people volunteer to help with your work?
We'd really love any community organisation who wants to be involved in the work that we do, particularly organisations who are right now helping people to use the internet. And if you're a community organisation and you already help people to learn how to use the internet or to do things like look for work or keep themselves healthy, or we do work like dementia cafes, phone our helpline or send us an email. That would be really great to hear from you. Our email is hello@goodthingsfoundation.org, or we're based in Sheffield, so you can call us on 0114 349 1666. So 0114 349 1666.
And presumably an individual who's interested in helping, if they get in touch with you, you'll be able to put them in touch with their appropriate local group.
I would say contact Digital Brighton and Hove, because they're your local group. We know that they're active and helping people right now. They may well be better connected to the local groups who are open and active and looking for help. So I would go local first, but by all means get in touch with Good Things Foundation as well.
Helen, thanks very much.
It's a pleasure, thank you.
I've been speaking to Helen Milner of the Good Things Foundation. If you want to get in touch with them, you can email them, and their address is hello@goodthingsfoundation.org. That's hello@goodthingsfoundation, which is typed all as one word with no spaces, .org. Or you can phone them on 0114 349 1666. Helen suggested that it might be better in the first instance to contact their partners in Brighton and Hove, who are Digital Brighton and Hove. And you can find out more information about them on their website, which is www.digitalbrightonandhove.org.uk. That's www.digitalbrightonandhove, typed all as one word, .org. And we're hoping to have an interview with them in our next programme. OK, back to you, Chris.
Thanks, Richard. And as we were hearing earlier from Charlotte Waring, the pandemic has hit every charity fundraising very hard, and our local Age UK is no exception. And they're experiencing losses of over £50,000 every month following the temporary closure of their centres due to the pandemic. Despite this, the charity is needed more than ever before and has transformed its services, handling thousands of referrals to help vulnerable older people locally, and they're urging the government to step in with financial support as services are stretched. The charity has already taken more than 3,000 referrals and is now focused primarily on food and medication deliveries. It's also supporting those feeling lonely during isolation and has already made over 700 phone calls to those that need a friendly chat and a listening ear. Now here's Maya Davis with a quotation from Helen Rice, the Chief Executive at Age UK Brighton and Hove.
With our centres closed, we're unable to make money to support ourselves. We're also unsure how long older people will need to remain in lockdown, which is a real worry. We're deeply concerned about their well-being and the acute loneliness many are feeling. Also, each day that goes by sees our losses mount. What we do know is we're needed more than ever. We've had a number of clients overwhelmed or in tears on the phone as they are so grateful for our help. Our staff and volunteers are working tirelessly, so I can only hope that the government recognises that and offers us some financial support at this terrible time.
That was Maya Davis with a quote from Helen Rice, the Chief Executive of Age UK Brighton and Hove. Joining us now is railway expert and architectural enthusiast Tim Dunn, who's celebrating some of UK's hidden treasures with a new series on UK TV. And it's called The Architecture the Railways Brought, which explores the stories behind so sometimes amazing constructions. Good morning and welcome to At Home This Morning, Tim.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And what sort of architecture are we looking at?
Oh, we're looking at all sorts. We're looking at about 40 different buildings, ranging from big stations like King's Cross and St Pancras, we're down to sort of little countryside wayside stations and signal boxes too, railway hotels, viaducts, tunnels. it's the full range of engineering and buildings that have either been built by or because of the railways.
Where did all this start?
Well, as in, when railways start building architecture? I suppose railways started actually in the Georgian times, before the Victorians kind of era started. And we saw classical railway buildings and sort of early stuff that looked almost like some country houses for stations. And then as railways sort of proliferated across the UK and Europe, you see this maturity in design of different types of buildings and a massive variety of styles as different localities and competing companies chose different styles for their different railway lines. So you see all sorts of different influences of time, location, architect, giving this incredible variety of stuff that you see today that still surrounds our railway network.
And of course, we've got an example here in Brighton with the Mercator train shed at Brighton Station.
Oh, an absolute favourite of mine. I mean, we didn't get to visit on this series, unfortunately, but Mercator's architecture is just wonderful. And he's thought to have influenced a lot of stations up and down the south coast, and indeed the viaducts that are connected up to London. I love Brighton Station. I mean, there's little quirks to it that I really enjoy. This programme sort of looks at some of the grand stuff like that, sort of looks down the ground. So, I mean, if you go into Brighton Station, you can still see one of the platforms is still made of wood. You can notice this. If you go across to one side of it, on the eastern side, is still a wooden platform from many years ago. So history is right underneath our feet.
About some of the architecture we've lost?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we celebrate, of course, the great stuff, but there are some that have gone. Some people bemoan the fact we lost the Euston Station that was knocked down to build the 1960s Euston Station. There are some interesting bits to it, but it had to go because it was a big sort of mishmash. But things like, the great Euston Hall, designed by Philip Hardwick, was a great structure. And, of course, the big famous Doric arch outside is one that we had lost and it really could have been saved. But a lot of our disused railway lines around the UK weirdly, still exist with their structures, and they've been turned into homes and so on. But you're right, some of the stuff that we have lost is truly very sad. And some of our larger railway stations in cities have been changed. But of course, railways are not there to be museum pieces. They are there as vital infrastructure. You know, railways are there to deliver something, and we're just lucky that so much of the past has survived.
Absolutely. And talking of the past, I mean, preserved railways, are there any examples on preserved railways?
Oh, yeah. We go off to the Ffiniog Railway in northwest Wales, which is one of my favourite railway lines in the world. I mean, I've been to it hundreds of times. And we go and look at how they've built this deviation to get round a lake that swallowed up the north part of their line. And the volunteers built an embankment and a tunnel and a bridge to get across this new landscape to go around the edge of this lake. And then we go to places like Dartmouth, where there's a railway station at Dartmouth, which has never seen a train because it's built on the other side of the river to the main railway station. So it's a railway station kind of set back away from the railway itself. But yeah, there are quite a few other ones we go to just around the UK because, again, so many wonderful people have spent time and joy restoring these things, either for a new function or back to its original function of actually serving trains. There's a great one at Wolferton Royal Station out in Norfolk, where a couple of people over the years have restored the former royal station for the Sandringham estate back to its original royal status. It has these incredible waiting rooms that is now this man's wonderful home. They even turned the signal box into a kind of like a granny flat and a summer house. It's remarkable to see.
Look forward to seeing it. And remind us, Tim, when is it on and where?
Well, it's on the Yesterday channel, which is a free-to-view channel on satellite. So Yesterday, it's on every Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock. It's also on UK TV Play for catch-up.
Lovely. Tim, thank you very much for joining us, and more power to your elbow.
Thank you so much. A pleasure talking to you.
And that just about brings us to the end of this edition of At Home This Morning, a magazine programme that's brought to you by Brighton's only truly local radio station, Radio Reverb, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, on digital radio, and online at www.radioreverb.com. So, until we next meet over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, it's goodbye from me. However, don't forget that Richard will be here with his next show in just 2 weeks. It's just time for me to repeat those all-important contact details. For info on how you can find out more about which Specsavers stores are open, go online to www.specsavers.co.uk. You can find out how you can help finance the work of the Chestnut Tree Hospice by going online to www.chestnut-tree-house.org.uk. And for more information on the Home Serve campaign for NHS and care home staff, simply enter www.homeserve.com. For the past hour, you've been listening to a slightly croaky Chris English with At Home This Morning, which is a programme produced by Grey Matters for Radio Reverb. And here, as usual, I must thank my executive producer, Richard Davis, for all the technical operation and putting the programme together. But my final thanks must go to you, our listener, wherever you may be, either via your radio or online at www.radioreverb.com. And just before I say goodbye, may I remind you that you can listen again to a selection of some of the recent editions of At Home This Morning by simply visiting our website at www.greymattersproductions.org.uk. And so until next time we meet over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, this is a slightly croaky Chris English signing off with my usual message. Keep safe. Bye for now.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb.